Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we have an action-packed show for you today. Going to catch you up on the latest and the greatest of the world of the automobile. We've got a lot of NASCAR racing to talk about. They raced last night, Saturday night race in Richmond. And then we have the race to catch from last weekend, which was in Watkins Glen, New York. We'll catch you up on a little Formula One as Formula One is on their summer break. So we'll kind of give you a reset on who is leading and what's coming up with those guys when their next race starts. IndyCar is off this weekend. They'll be back next weekend in Milwaukee. Got some interesting stories about a Volkswagen subscription. It's not so much you just bought the car. Now they want you to spend some additional dollars to unleash and get some additional performance. We'll talk about what happens when your car gets hot and how to keep your car cool. Of course, we'll talk about what's going on with gas prices, and it wouldn't be The Car Show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on The Car Show. Of The Drive, the headline reads, I drove a 2025 Honda Civic Hybrid for 2 months, and I got an easy 51 miles per gallon. Despite cars becoming heavier and larger over the years, many fuel-efficient vehicles currently on the market won't break the bank. But the options of the gasoline segment and the hybrid, also the plug-in hybrid, the latter are typically less affordable. Either way, car shoppers are spoiled for choices. Well, my choice, and I mean really my choice, because this is a car I'd buy tomorrow if I needed one, is the 2025 Honda Civic Hybrid. Now, we've reviewed this Civic Hybrid twice over the last 13 months, calling it a Prius hater after a couple hours behind the wheel of this prototype in June. Now, in March, it got the top choice after a week-long test in the frigid Canadian North. Now, what do these tests have in common? Well, they were both relatively brief, providing just miniature snippets in comparison to a real-world ownership experience. Why not find out how one performs over a couple months? Well, the Civic doesn't need any introduction. A popular model remains one of the best-selling cars in the U.S. Nearly every vehicle on the market has evolved and matured and become more advanced over the years, and of course, more expensive. Now, for 2025, the sedan hybrid offers two trims, the Sport Hybrid and the Sport Touring Hybrid. The former will set you back at about $30,500. Range-topping Sport Touring Hybrid comes in at $33,490, including $1,200 in destination charges. Now, you can also opt for the hatchback model. That'll set you back an additional $1,200. But it's worth noting, there really isn't a lot of necessary options you need, except maybe some visual add-ons. So these prices are pretty representative of what most buyers should expect to pay. Now, the aforementioned reviews will tell you everything you need to know about the exterior, the interior, the driving dynamics. Today, I'll be focusing on the most important attribute of this vehicle, its drivetrain. The 2-liter four-cylinder hybrid engine, continuously variable automatic transmission front-wheel drive system allows this comfortable sedan to go a long way on a very little bit of fuel. Now, despite fuel efficiency being the main mission, the battery-assisted four-banger boasts some decent performance specs. There's 200 horsepower on tap, which is more than enough to get out of your own way and others on the highway, and just the right amount of fun on a country road. There's 230 foot-pounds of torque nesting in the hybrid, and it's a little sport. It's more torquey and sportier than the SI. The engine is tuned differently, of course. The CVT, the constant variable transmission, instead of a 6-speed manual, Honda did a great job giving the most fuel-efficient Civic a generous pinch of excitement. Now, my test began with about 330 miles already logged on the 2025 Civic by the time it was delivered to me, and over nearly 8 weeks of driving, I racked up 1,830 miles. My goal was to find out what is the real-world fuel efficiency, not just city, not just highway, definitely not just hyper-miling. Y'all know run errands around town, and you're running late for whatever soul-draining commitment on your calendar. Other days, you're gently cruising across state lines to go visit some family. Hopefully, you don't have to drive sometimes because you're home relaxing. Furthermore, through the test, I forced myself, even though it was performing well, to accurately and realistically review this as possible. Now, the battery usage is prioritized by the drivetrain, often as much as possible in the name of fuel efficiency. So it wouldn't be exactly to tell you what it's all these things for from behind the wheel. But in the other hybrid economy cars, I've all very noticeable, sometimes a harsh transition from electric power to gasoline power. When pulling away from a stop, the battery typically drives the front axle until the gas engine kicks in. However, in the Civic, Hands off is extremely smooth, isn't felt when the pedals or through the steering wheel. There's no clunk or jolt from the drivetrain. A very, very pleasant experience. Now, the reason for this is Honda's two-motor hybrid system, which they debuted back in 2014 on the Accord. Now it's in its fourth generation. I won't bore you with this engineering lesson, primarily because I'm not qualified to teach that lesson, but I'll try to give you the four-part system and how it works and why it's so clever. First, there's an electric motor generator that provides electricity to the battery. There's an electric propulsion motor, which provides power to the drive wheels. Then comes the Atkinson cycle gas engine, which is connected to the electric generator and starter motor, which works as an electrical generator, supplying power to the hybrid battery, and the propulsion motor. Now, here's one of the keys to the Civic's efficiency. The engine that also drives the wheels via a lock-up clutch. But primarily this happens during highway cruising conditions for optimum efficiency. The last is the power control unit, the brains that makes all this magic happen. And what's interesting is more surprising that the battery is also prioritized on the highway, not just in the city. The highest speed I experienced on the freeway was 75 miles per hour. When the tachometer needle dropped to zero and the battery graphic turned on, even while cruising on the interstate in battery power, you still have enough oomph to pass a slower car if you need to. Of course, step on the accelerator strongly and the four-banger engine will fire right up. Well, I drove over a variety of roads and encountered many driving and weather scenarios during my test. I'd estimate about, of the 830 miles driven, 60% of those were driven in the city. I mean, speeds that were mostly under 50 miles an hour with constant stop and go. This favors the hybrid powertrain as it can easily recharge the battery. That means deploying more energy more often, which in turn allows the gas engine to remain shut off. Early summer in the Midwest can bring a variety of climates from 90 degrees during the day to 40s at night. I did not observe any variation in the performance could be attributed to extreme weather like you would in an electric vehicle. The Civic behaved up to par throughout all the tests, and its attitude toward the daily driving did not change. I managed to squeeze 400 to 420 miles out of a 10.6-gallon tank, which is more like 11 with a little bit of reserve. The only annoyance I discovered was the unpleasant sound of the gas engine turning on to take over from the battery. It was not felt per se, just heard. The sound is unrefined and a bit loud. Momentarily interrupts the Civic otherwise well soundproofed cabin. Well, my sport hybrid tester came in at $33,945 thanks to the single option, the sleek $455 edition for the Blue Lagoon Pearl color. Everything else, well, was standard besides the paint. I mean everything given in the trim in this lineup. Here we go. Heated leather seats, adaptive cruise control, dual zone climate, moonroof, wireless Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, Bose audio system, Honda Sensing ADAS tech, which is standard on all models, 18-inch wheels, and all the cosmetic bits included. It's fair to say it comes with about just everything you might need. There are a couple features I would have loved to have seen, such as a memory seat position and a heated steering wheel. Well, my combined fuel economy numbers of 51.2 surpasses the EPA estimate of 49. In terms of city driving only, I averaged 53 for at least one full tank of gas, which bests the EPA 50 mile per gallon average. Regardless, these figures heading north of 35 is considered solid in my book. 40 to 45 while enjoying the convenience of a long-range fuel economy plus the efficiency of highway driving and $38 fill-ups at Midwest gas prices. It calls into the question, are electric vehicles the best overall value? Both have pros and cons, but as a whole, this car should entice car shoppers to do a lot of loads of research before buying their next car, depending on what powertrain you'd like. Well, I totally agree. We have a Prius, and the hybrid car is just the way to go, I think. It gives you the best of both worlds. Now, ours is not the plug-in hybrid, so it only activates and charges from the motor itself. our daughter-in-law and her husband have the plug-in Prius, and they're able to drive 40 to almost 50 miles on each charge, which allows Dan to drive to work and back without ever having to stop at the gas station. So, yeah, I agree. Electric vehicles are cool, but I think plug-in hybrids are the way to go. NASCAR news. Last weekend, NASCAR was at Watkins Glen, a storied road course in New York, and the headline reads, Van Gisbergen decimates Cup field again at Watkins Glen. Well, Shane Van Gisbergen claimed his fourth NASCAR Cup Series on a road course this year with a win last weekend at Watkins Glen, a second win of more than 10 seconds over the field, and he made it look like it was effortless. The 36-year-old New Zealander led a best 30-rate laps of 90, including the final 17 at the historic Watkins Glen International Racetrack in picturesque upstate New York, and his number 88 Trackhouse Chevrolet across the finish line, 11.1 seconds ahead of Joe Gibbs Racing's Christopher Bell, who was in second. Van Gisbergen, the former Australian supercar multi-year champion, joins legend Dan Gurney in scoring their first five career cup races at road courses, and he did it the same weekend as Trackhouse announced a multi-year contract extension for him. Quote, it's good to get one back, Van Gisbergen said, over nodding to what happened last year. This is an awesome race. Coming back through the field after that pit stop, we had a lot of fun. The car was just amazing. You know, it's the stuff you dream about, right? Smiling Van Gisbergen acknowledged after a flawless weekend. I'm very lucky to get to drive for an amazing bunch of people. Just go out and execute. It went flawless, and I really enjoyed it. Thank you to everyone. Now, Van Gisbergen, in his first full season in NASCAR's elite level at the Cup Series, has been essentially unstoppable on road courses. His four victories this year at Mexico City, Chicago, Sonoma, and now at Watkins Glen, that gives the rookie a record win, and he now ties perennial championship contender Denny Hamlin for the most victories in the series this year at four. With all intent and purposes, the style of racing, now the competition judges itself about how close they can get to him but not beat him. Yeah, it's just impressive to watch this guy race. He is just literally unstoppable, and everybody kind of just says, well, this is how I did in comparison to Shane. So Christopher Bell finished second. Chris Buescher finished in third. William Byron in fourth. And Chase Briscoe finished in fifth. Formula One is on its summer holiday right now. They take a break every season. And I just wanted to kind of give everybody kind of an update before we jump back into Formula One here in the next couple weeks. So right now, for McLaren, Oscar Piastri is leading the championship, and he has 284 points. His teammate, Lando Norris, in second at 275, so only 9 points difference between first and second. Then it's a big jump down to Max Verstappen, who is in third at 187. So Oscar is almost 100 points clear of Max. All right, and fourth, in a contract year right now, who does not have a contract for next year, George Russell, and he is at 172 points, driving for Mercedes-Benz. Charles Leclerc is in fifth. He is driving for Ferrari, and now in sixth position in his first year with Ferrari is Lewis Hamilton, and he is at 109 points. Kimi Antonelli, who drives for Mercedes, is in seventh position with 64. Then you have Alex Albon, Nico Hülkenberg, and Esteban Ocon rounding out the top 10. So, incredible. It's to see what is going on in Formula One with McLaren. Of course, certainly I'm excited about that because I'm a big McLaren fan. Whether it's their Formula One team or their IndyCar team, I certainly root the team on. So now the next race coming up will be on August 29th, and that is going to be the Dutch Heineken Grand Prix at Zandvoort. And then our final race of the season goes all the way to the Yas Marina Circuit in Abu Dhabi, and that is in December 5th through the 7th. We have American races coming up right now. We have the Heineken Grand Prix of Las Vegas, and that is going to be on November 20th through November 22nd, and that's definitely one of my favorite races. I've been to it before, and it's a lot of fun to head up there. So you're all caught up on Formula One, and they'll be back at the end of this month. Well, IndyCar is not racing this weekend, but they raced last weekend, and Penske finally breaks through, and Willpower riding high after breaking a dry spell in Portland. Well, out on the racetrack, Team Penske doesn't have a lot of friends, but within the brother and sisterhood on pit lane, there's an immense respect held for the men and women who field the number 2, 3, and 12 Chevrolets. And that was made evident when Willpower ended the team's season-long drought on Sunday, last Sunday, at Portland International Raceway, with rival crews and drivers depending on Power and Matt Johnson and the rest of the 12 to shake their hands and wish them well. Quote, "I'm happy for everyone, man," Power said after scoring his 45th IndyCar victory. "Both teammates came up, all the engineers, all the crews, as I drove down pit lane. Everyone was happy to see us win." And it has been a long time for the fact that they had no wins this season for Penske, which is just incredible. It's hard to think about, but they've had a lot of turmoil. They've fired some big executives on the team, so they're having to kind of almost step back and start almost from scratch. Then there's the conversation about Will Power. He has not signed a contract for next year. He hasn't been offered a contract for next year. And there's all sorts of conversation about David Malukas coming over from AJ Voigt Racing and replacing him. So we'll see. The other undercurrent in this conversation is Scotty McLaughlin, who drives for Penske in the IndyCar Series. There's rumors that Penske might assign him to NASCAR, because Scott McLaughlin came from the Australian Supercar Touring Series, where he was a champion as well. So they're seeing the success that Shane Van Gisbergen is having in NASCAR. Maybe they're going to keep Will Power and move over Shane Van Gisbergen over to the NASCAR team, Scotty McLaughlin, so he can compete with Shane Van Gisbergen. We'll see. Lots of conversations, but the bottom line is, big win for Penske as they win at Portland. Well, I didn't mean to bury the lead, but Alex Palou wins the IndyCar Championship. Well, it's official. At Portland last weekend, the Spaniard and his number 10 Chip Ganassi Racing completed a season for the ages, clinching 3 championships in a row and 4 championships in 5 seasons. It is incredible. Palou's achievement also adds a remarkable run of success by the Ganassi team, where they have won 13 of its 17 championships after the turn of the century. So it's pretty incredible. So big congratulations to Alex Palou, his 3rd championship in a row in IndyCar and his 4th of his career. What's next for this fast driver? Well, from the pages of The Drive, the headline reads, "Even Volkswagen is doing horsepower subscriptions now." Well, how does 27 more horsepower for $22 a month sound? Well, Volkswagen has started charging that in the United Kingdom for its cheapest and smallest electric vehicle. Well, subscriptions are coming for all of us in every aspect of life. All we can do is try to avoid them. Well, it just got a little bit tougher as the owner of the Volkswagen's smallest electric vehicle, the ID.3, in the United Kingdom, and we're hearing about subscriptions for improved performance and creature comforts in luxury cars, but Volkswagen is trialing BMW and Mercedes of its greatest consumer hostile policies in gating an additional 27 horsepower for $22.30 monthly for the ID.3. Alternatively, the owners can shell out $878 to permanently unlock the power for the life of the vehicle. Now, this news comes courtesy of Audio Express. It's alarming for several reasons. First, the ID isn't quite an actual bargain, starting at $41,000. It's no Mercedes. And second, the article points out that the car is registered at 228 horsepower stock, which affects insurance rates, even though drivers only get 201 horsepower before subscribing for an additional $22 a month. So you're paying a penalty on your insurance premium based off the power that you can only access if you give Volkswagen more money per month. Now, this monthly fee also lifts the torque from 195 to 228, Volkswagen says it increases the output, but it doesn't impact the range, so at least there's that. The optional software upgrade applies to all trim levels, except for the Speedy GXT variant, which already has 320 horsepower and costs $21,000 more. That's roughly $63,000 for a Volkswagen electric vehicle. Well, the best outcome we can come and hope for in these cases is the outcry is so loud that Volkswagen relents. That worked on the degree on this side of the pond when the BMW heated seats policy, but retractions don't always last forever, and automakers are pretty much set on biding their time until the software locking everything is normalized, and they'll try to get away with as much of it as they can. Now, for those of you who don't recall, the BMW heated seat policy is BMW, I will say 2 years ago, the car had heated seats, but in order to access the heated seats, you had to pay an extra monthly premium. So who knows? We'll see what's happening in this situation. But Volkswagen, yeah, $22 a month for some extra horsepower. I'm not sure I'd pay that $22 a month. I want to give a little heads up for some of the races that are coming up. NASCAR will be at Daytona next week for the final season-ending race of the regular season. This was a race that normally they would run over 4th of July. It used to be called the Firecracker 400. But now Daytona is the last race before the playoffs. In fact, let me give you the update on what's going on with the NASCAR playoffs as of this last race. And before I do that, I almost completely forgot about the race from last night. Austin Dillon won the race driving for Richard Childress Racing. And if you don't remember, last year Austin Dillon won this race with a huge shove of Joey Logano, knocked him out of the way. He was allowed to keep the race victory, but he was not allowed to participate in the playoffs. So Austin Dillon now punches his ticket into the playoffs. Second is Alex Bowman, who is on the outside looking in with no race wins, but is still technically could qualify on points. Ryan Blaney finished in third, Joey Logano in fourth, and Austin Cindric finished in fifth. Quick rundown of NASCAR right now. William Byron leads with Chase Elliott in second, Denny Hamlin third, Kyle Larson in fourth. In fact, William Byron clinched the regular season points championship. Kyle Larson in fourth, Ryan Blaney in fifth, Christopher Bell in sixth, Tyler Reddick in seventh, Chase Briscoe in eighth, Alex Bowman in ninth, Bubba Wallace in tenth, Chris Buescher in 11th, Joey Logano in 12th, Ryan Priest in 13th, Ross Chastain in 14th, and Austin Cindric in 15th. So those are the current standings as far as the regular season. Right now, there's only two drivers that are currently have qualified for the playoffs as of today, Tyler Reddick and Alex Bowman, that have not won a race. And then Chris Buescher, Ryan Preece, they're on the bubble, but they cannot catch these guys with just one race to go. So if you're below that, you're going to have to win to get into the playoffs. Prices with our friends over at AAA. Right now, we're pretty steady at $3.13 a gallon. Average price here in Arizona is $3.23. New Mexico, $2.90. Colorado, $3.05. Utah, $3.34. Nevada, $3.73. And California at $4.49 a gallon. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices here, specifically in Arizona. Well, the cheap gas, well, still up in Williams. The Maverick station at $2.59. The Love's Travel Stop in Williams also at $2.59. How about this, folks? Gilbert, Arizona, $2.64 at Sam's Club. Sam's Club in Tucson at $2.65. Costco, $2.66 in Tucson as well. And then Holbrook, well, the Speedy gas station there is $2.67. All right, let's see what's going on here in Metro Phoenix with our gas prices. We already mentioned the cheap gas at Sam's Club in Gilbert. Sam's Club and other one in Gilbert at $2.74. So the cheapest one is on Gilbert Road. Costco in Gilbert at $2.79. The other Costco in Gilbert on Arizona Avenue at $2.79. Walmart up in Scottsdale at $2.91. That's where I got my gas this week. And then the Arco in McQueen and Gilbert. So it looks like all the cheap gas is down in the East Valley. Oh, exception. The Super Gasoline on North 27th Avenue in Phoenix at $2.99 a gallon. Well, we've reached that time. It's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, my grandson has a 2001 Dodge Dakota pickup truck. It was a hand-me-down from my father-in-law to my grandson. Now, for some reason, we lose the low-beam headlights when we pull the tilt steering wheel down. I looked for a shorted or broken wires, but I don't see anything. I'm thinking there must be something wrong with the dimmer switch. By the way, the high beams do work. And that's from any suggestions. And that's from Pawpaw and Christian. Well, I believe this truck has a headlight switch on the dashboard, Pawpaw. Am I right? In any case, it's not important because I don't think it's the switch that's causing the problem. The problem is most likely is the multifunction switch, which is a stalk that sticks out of the side of the steering column. That switch activates the directional signals, better known as the turn signals, switches your lights from low beams to high beams. Because the problem happens when you tilt the steering wheel, I'm guessing that there's somewhere in that switch itself or the bundle of wires coming out of it, and it could be pinched or possibly even broken. Now, if you want to fix this yourself, you're going to have to be comfortable with disarming the airbag. Yes, the airbag. Otherwise, you'll need a multifunctional switch and possibly a nose job, Pawpaw. And once you do that, well, then you can just use a puller to remove the steering wheel. My suggestion would be is to buy the switch first. It'll probably cost you about, $100. I'd replace the switch and then test it before putting everything back together again. With the switch wired up and working, but still hanging there, not installed, try moving the steering column up and down. And then I'd jiggle the switch and jiggle the wires and see if the low beams at that point in time fail. And hopefully, they won't. Now, if you feel fairly confident that all of this is still working, then you can put it back together again, and hopefully the geometry doesn't change anything. Now, if you're not confident in your ability to deal with the airbags and the steering wheel, then any shop ought to be able to do this job for you, Pawpaw. Good luck. Yeah, that would be a pass no for Jeff. Anytime you think about messing with an airbag and all the things that come up with an airbag, the igniter, the possibility that making a mistake, could deliver an airbag shot to the face. Yeah, that definitely does not sound like something that I want to get involved with. So I'm going to guess, but I shouldn't say that. This guy sounds like he's pretty savvy in working on his own vehicles. And so he might exactly try to do this. Hopefully it works out for them. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name's Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday. And you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.